Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back again to the airwaves of PNPnetwork.com. Our favorite Jethro, that's right, Max Baer Jr. You know him, you love him as Jethro Boneeater on the Beverly Hillbillies. And he's going to bring the Beverly Hillbillies all over the country to people in Vegas. We're going to talk to him about that. And there's some great stuff going on. And, of course, you can always keep up with Max Baer news at jethroscasino.com. So make sure that you actually go to that site. It's a great site. And Max, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. Appreciate you asking me. Oh, by the way, I wish I could go to Vegas. It's going to be in Carson City, Nevada.
Okay.
But we do have, what I'm doing right now is I'm just going through my licensing process, and I go before the Gaming Control Board on Wednesday, and that's because I had to have an actual casino to open or have a piece of a casino. And so what I did is I bought a little tiny piece of a very small casino in North Las Vegas. And that's why on my little itinerary it says that he's going to be accepted or he's applying for a gaming license for a casino in North Las Vegas, Nevada.
See, and you're doing pretty well for a guy with a sixth grade education.
Well, I graduated sixth grade. What do you mean? I graduated. They never said it, but I moved into the seventh.
It's such an endearing character that, you know, I don't care how old you are, you will always be Jethro.
Hey, look, I told somebody the other day, I said, I was born Max Baer Jr., but I'm going to die Jethro Bodine. There's just no other way. That's just the way it is.
Luckily, you won't be Jethrine Bodine.
Oh, my God, I couldn't handle that one. You know, I always used to like girls that were fairly well endowed until I had to put on those falsies and wear that weight around, and I hated it. I said, I don't know how they do it. I said, forget about this. It was just terrible. I had strap marks indented on my shoulders and stuff like that, like these poor girls get, and I just said, this is the pits.
You know, I noticed, in fact, I have in the station here, we have a Beverly Hillbillies DVD. Did you guys get anything from that at all?
No, what happened, the DVDs that you've got are actually very, very, it's very peculiar. It's probably, it would be interesting for maybe your listeners as well as yourself, that the ones that you have are black and white.
Right.
And the reason why is that the first 30 or 40, whatever it was, shows went into public domain. Because the guy that was, or the woman that was supposed to do this at CBS, didn't renew the copyright.
Wow.
So, what you hear, what you see there, is the shows that are in public domain, and the song is not really the song from the Beverly Hillbillies, it's a re-recording. Because of the fact, the original guy does not sing it, Jerry Scoggins, doesn't sing the song. And the reason for it is because the songwriters were Paul Hennings, and he's the writer-creator of the show. And they couldn't give those rights away. I mean, those rights are always in perpetuity.
Right.
And so, because of ASCAP and BMI and so forth. So what happened is that they couldn't use the song from the Beverly Hillbillies. So what they had to do is to just get the videos, and then re-record a new song.
Huh. Wow.
So if you really listen to the song, you'll see that it's not from the original show.
That's an interesting note there for folks who are going by it. Now, is there a time where they're going to be releasing it? Are they planning anything?
Well, no. What's going to happen eventually? So when I get the casino up, my deal with the CBS is I get to re-record all the shows. And then I will have all the shows, all 274. And then I get to use them and sell them from my casino. So, therefore, they will be available at that particular point in time because I will go take the time and the trouble to go through and put them all on DVDs.
And when you do that, you can put your own little soundtrack in, and
well, no, I'm not. No, no, I'll have the licensing right from CBS. But what we're going to do is we'll put different things on there. You know, like when you take a movie today, and you see what's in the theater, then you have interviews with the characters.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
The director,
yeah,
or something.
Exactly.
We can put those things on there, like either from Donna or myself,
exactly.
if, you know, who was ever still alive, and that's just the two of us now, and we can put clips of Buddy and do outtakes and some other things to assemble a DVD package that has something extra other than just the shows themselves that are humorous and are good and fun antidotes for people to listen.
I did a one-hour interview with Buddy Ebsen. That was one of the favorites I've ever done. I've done thousands of interviews with celebrities, but we were supposed to talk for 10 minutes, and we ended up talking for over an hour.
Well, Buddy is such a delightful and such a comfortable guy that he has no problem. You know, you talk about almost anything, and Buddy will just talk. He'll just go right along.
He was just a fantastic guy.
He was a wonderful guy. The good thing about it is that Buddy died. He was 95 years old, but he lived a wonderful life. He wanted to be a dancer, he wanted to be an actor, he wanted to be a writer, he wanted to write songs, he wanted to write plays. He was on Broadway, he did movies, he did television series, he sailed, he painted. He did everything that he ever wanted to do, he did. And how much better in your life can you have a life that you're able to basically make a living doing those things that you would basically do for free?
That's
because
true.
You love him so much. It's like Michael Jordan. Do you think he played for the money? Hell no. He was a great athlete. He played basketball because he loved it, and because he was so great, they paid him all that money. The same with A-Rod, the same with Tiger Woods.
Right.
George Burns said something years ago. I'll never forget it. He says, Johnny Carson asked him something about why he lived as long as he did. And he was 90-something at the time. And he said, find a job that you would do for nothing, that you love that much. And if you can earn a living at that, that is the best life you could possibly have on this earth.
That's true. Well, one of the things that Buddy was talking about during the interview we did, and my listeners were just overwhelmed by it, we got a lot of response from emails from it. Well, he talked about the Wizard of Oz and you know, his original role.
Oh, about the way he almost died.
Yes.
Well, yeah, they put that metal paint on him.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that it absorbed in his skin as much. It was he breathed it in.
Right.
It got in his lungs.
Right.
I think, actually, they damaged his lungs. He knew that. And I think part of why Buddy's last few years, it wasn't his heart that went. It was his lungs.
Right.
I mean, his lungs just were the weakest part.
Yeah.
Buddy was in very good shape. Buddy was dancing and everything. I went to his 93rd birthday, and 92nd birthday, I think it was, 93rd. And he was dancing, and the only thing he had was a little hard of hearing, which he said when he was talking to me, that was good, because he could turn me off.
But I mean, he was really cool. But one of the things I really noticed about him was many people, if they had that situation, would have been so bitter. I mean, nowadays there would have been lawsuits from it. But he was not bitter at all about it. He just told it as an experience of life, and he went on and moved on.
Well, what happened was there was no intent there. He realized there was no intent. Nobody was trying to harm him.
Right.
And today, we have become such a litigious society. It borders on the insanity. If a robber breaks into your house and trips on the carpet and hurts himself and the cops catch him, he sues because the carpet should have been tacked down.
That's
it's
right.
Crazy.
Yep.
We have gone so far to the left that it just, that's what used to drive Buddy nuts. Buddy used to get crazy with this.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Buddy was a conservative.
Right.
Because of the fact he couldn't understand this nonsense. How could somebody break into your house to steal from you or to harm you, injure themselves, and then sue you for a faulty carpet or a faulty light plug or something because they got shocked by it or something?
Yep.
It's like we've gone insane.
Only in America.
That's what Don King says,
yep.
Only in America.
Yep. Yeah, Don's an interesting character, too. He's been on here.
Yes, he is.
It's a one-way conversation with Don, though. He just talks.
No. Well, Don and I are the only two guys that are listed in the Guinness Book of Records under the same thing.
And what's that?
We're the only living people that ever interrupted ourselves. With Don, if you take a breath, you lose your turn.
That's true. It's very, very funny. So now tell us a little bit about how you got involved in the casino thing in the first place. We talked a few years ago, and you were already talking about doing the Jethro's Casino thing.
You got it.
Yeah, and it's been a while.
Do you know when I got the rights? 1991.
Right, and we spoke probably, I don't know, 5-6 years ago.
I licensed the rights. It took me 39 meetings from 1989 to 1991 to get the rights from CBS.
Mm-hmm.
Then I tried to go ahead and find a place to do it, which I had already lined up here at Lake Tahoe. I wanted a little joint because I had retired. And I wanted some place that I could, you know, have something going on.
Right.
You know, so I wasn't just going to the gym and water skiing, snow skiing, and doing all the other nonsense, riding motorcycles and riding horses and stuff to just have fun. I wanted to have a little business and get my melon working.
Yep.
So I didn't work. Went to Vegas, tried to do the Aladdin Hotel. That didn't work with another friend of mine. Went back up to Reno and tried to look at two or three places. And then in 1998, I got involved with the Mace Rich Company, who is a REIT, and they own the Park Lane Mall in Reno, Nevada. And we were going to go there. I had made a deal with them, and I was going through zoning to get the zoning changed from commercial to tourist commercial, which means you can have gaming.
Right.
And I went there, got it changed, and then the Mace Rich Company had a problem with their stock. The stock was only at 16 or 17 or 15 or something like that, and they didn't think that it was good for them to put their $35 or $40 million into the revamping of the mall. And rather, they were going to take the money and go down and put in a couple of stores like a Bloomingdale's or a Neiman Marcus down in the Bay Area, down in Hillsborough or Atherton, which is a high-end area, instead of spending that kind of money doing the mall up here in Reno next to the casino.
Mm-hmm.
So it never went through.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started working on, I gave up kind of like I didn't have a real location. And then Carson City contacted me, and then Douglas County contacted me. They're right next to each other in the valley. Between Carson City is on the direct road from Reno to Lake Tahoe. If you want to go to Lake Tahoe from Reno, you have to go right through Carson City and vice versa.
Okay.
So it's halfway between both places.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the state capital. So it's got a lot of capital, you know, a lot of state workers, and it's about 60,000 people, and there's a couple of bedroom communities around. We've got about another 60 or 80,000 people. So I finally found a place, a Walmart, that was going to be vacant because they were moving to build a bigger super Walmart, you know, with groceries.
Sure.
So I bought the Walmart in order to go ahead and to put the casino in there and then put the movie theater in and build a hotel. And then what happened is that JCPenney's, who is an anchor in the mall, and Glenbrook Realty, which is the owner of the other stores there, the three owners were Walmart, Penney's, and this Glenbrook company.
Mm-hmm.
They had what they call the CC&Rs, which are covenants, conditions, and restrictions, which are agreements between the three owners that it's only to be used for certain things because of the fact that there's common area, you know, common parking and common maintenance and all of this
right.
other things.
Yeah.
So I believed when I bought the place that they were going to agree to let me put the casino in, which did not conform to the CC&Rs. They would have to be changed. Well, after I bought the place, they became reluctant to do that. So I have been in that position for the last 2 years, and right now I'm trying to negotiate out of it. But I have paid cash for the Walmart and the land, the 13 acres.
Did you buy it
with my own money.
No, did you buy it with a contingency, though, that you had?
No. I just bought it because Walmart didn't want any contingencies.
Well,
they wouldn't take any of that.
Yeah.
They had to, you know, whatever, if you paid for it, you put up the money, that was it. So I bought it.
Mm.
So I had a real estate investment.
Yeah.
So now I own a big empty building that I'm going to, one way or another, I will resolve it. I will resolve it by virtue of negotiating with them somehow to resolve any issues that they may have whereby they feel comfortable that the hotel and casino and movie theater will not harm them.
I would think it would bring more customers into their store.
Well, that's kind of the idea, but for some reason, it seems to me to be a little insane But what can I say?
There must be a stigma attached to the casino still.
It sure shouldn't be, because of the fact that there's a casino right across the street that JCPenney's has been using, and they've been using their parking lot for the last 7 months.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So they don't seem to be too upset about the cars from the other casinos parking over on the parking lot.
Maybe they're not big Beverly Hills Billy's fans.
Maybe. But JCPenney's is from Texas, so they're a little bit southern, I guess, and I can't figure that one out.
They prefer Green Acres if you see someone. Like you never know.
Hey, look it. I have given up trying to analyze.
Mm.
I just kind of say, hey, look it. You know, what it is what it is. I can't change it. I can only try to work within the framework of the concept.
So now that you own the Beverly Hillbillies name from CBS, you have it licensed.
For certain things, not 100% of everything, but for hotels, casinos, theme parks, motels, timeshare, RV parks, trailer parks, all consumables and all cosmetics. I actually have virtually all the things that CBS had the right to.
So what if you decide to put out Beverly Hillbillies lunchboxes for collectibles, could you do that?
That is a different thing. Intellectual property rights are very, very unusual. It's almost like bones in your body. Every bone is different. And if T-shirts and sweatshirts on the Beverly Hillbillies stuff,
mm-hmm.
Okay, that would all be Viacom. But it's actually owned CBS. Viacom owns CBS.
Right.
It's just another division of it.
Right.
Now, if I wanted to do anything consumables, I could do any of those. But if you wanted to do T-shirts or sweatshirts or hats or any apparel type stuff, then you would have to go through Viacom. And I have certain things through Viacom that I have a right to do in my casino.
But you
had to make that deal with them.
You can sell DVDs.
But I could make lunchboxes, and I could do that, yes, sir.
Okay. But you have to sell them in your hotel?
No, I could sell them out of the hotel as well. The difference is that I have a non-exclusive kind of deal until the casino opens. Once the casino opens and then I list the products that I'm going to be selling, then I have an exclusive on it.
I see.
But with the CBS thing, it's in perpetuity once I open the casino.
Hmm. That's a good agreement for you.
I made it almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like somebody buying property in downtown Dallas.
Hmm.
You know, or like in Beverly Hills, buy it 20 years ago, or San Francisco. Look at the property. It's gone up.
Right. Yeah.
There's people that have told me they bought property just 5-6 years ago, and it's tripled.
Yeah, around here in Boston, it's the same thing.
So what's probably it? Well, it seems like it's been the same thing everywhere.
Mm.
You know, but if you think about it, you know, you could damn near take a phone book and put your finger in it, and you could buy that piece of property, and it's gone up.
Mm.
Because you know, God only made so much land, and they ain't making any more of it, so. It seems like real estate is probably about as good investment as there is.
So I understand, actually, you have don't you have an appointment with the Gaming Commission in a couple of days?
I have it Wednesday.
Yeah.
Of this week, I go before the Gaming Control Board, and they have done an accounting colonoscopy. It's where they look in a medical sense at every transaction that you've ever done in your life.
Well, they got to make sure that you hang around with the right people.
That's right. Yeah. And if your name ends in a vowel, they look harder.
Mm, that's right.
But or if you have an Italian restaurant.
Mm.
Anyway, they do look into your background. They look from the time that you were a kid. Did you have any felonies, or did you do anything? And are you litigious? What about lawsuits? Did you try to? Like Enron, did you try to rip anybody off or anything like that? And were you the plaintiff or were you the defendant? And if you're the plaintiff, generally they don't look too hard at it unless you're having a lot of false claims. But if you're the defendant, what was the situation? How were they resolved? In whose favor? They look at that. They look at your criminal record, and then they follow the money. and in following the money, they want to make sure that whatever dollars that you spend, you have earned.
Right.
So that you don't, you know, it's like why people that make money illegally can't spend it is because that's how they find out, well, okay, where did you get the money?
Exactly.
If you're spending $1 million and you only declared you made $100,000, how'd you spend $1 million? That's the thing you can't hide.
Right.
And so they look at this. Well, hell, I mean, I'm as open as a book. I mean, I was on the Beverly Hillbillies for 9 years. I made my four little pictures. And I have some real estate investments, and I have the slot machines that I have from IGT that are the Beverly Hillbillies slot machines. And I have real estate, and that's it. I don't have any holding companies that are holding companies that are holding companies. I don't have bank accounts out of the United States. You know, I'm not invested in anything out of the continental United States. Matter of fact, I can't remember now. My partner may have, or I may have a piece of something, but most everything that I own is in California, Nevada.
No Cayman Islands, huh?
No Cayman Islands. You got it. I'm not the firm. I saw the firm. I saw them going over there to the Cayman with the boxes of stuff. Nope. As a matter of fact, I saw the firm the other night, the Moraltos, when Tom Cruise was going to those two guys.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, no, I don't have anything offshore or anything like that at all. So we've been, my partner and I are very conservative. I've lived very, very conservatively. When I retired, I just said, hey, look, I don't ever want to have to work again unless if I don't have to, and I want to own everything 100%. So basically, my homes I own, everything. The only thing I lease is my SUV. Every 2 years, I get a new Lincoln SUV, and that's it.
So you're eating up the gas like I am with my SUV.
Well, at my age, I'm more concerned about my health.
Exactly.
So I want to. If I could buy a semi truck or a tank and drive that,
I would get a Hummer.
What?
Get a Hummer.
I just don't like the looks of them. I just can't stand them. I look at them and I just, you know, I've tried to make go with it, but I just, you know, I can't do it. But I like this, and I take them. I put wide tires on it and help to change the suspension and do some things to it to stabilize it more. And I only drive 10,000 miles on a set of tires, so I don't wear them at all. So I'm not going to get any blowouts or hopefully, and I'm more concerned about if somebody comes across the line and hits me, so I'm driving in the right-hand lane all the time.
You know, there's one thing I wanted to ask you about, because I didn't ask you about it last time we spoke, because of the development of all these TV shows going to movies, the last one being the one starring Jessica Simpson that I cannot believe is the number one movie in the country right now.
But when did it come out?
It came out this week.
Last week.
Last week.
It came out last week?
Yeah, it's the number one movie in the country.
Well, it should be.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, summer is a young people's time.
Yeah.
Okay? It's car crashing. It's young people. It's the kids overcoming the cops. And you got Jessica Simpson with music. And she's a sexy girl.
Yeah.
And she's a good, I think she's a good singer. I think she's a nice person, personally.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know anything about her, but I've seen stuff on her. And she seems like a very, very nice person. As a matter of fact, I think, unless I'm incorrect, she was a virgin when she got married.
Well, I don't know.
That was one of her things.
Yeah, I never dated her, so I really don't know.
That was one of her things that she said.
Yeah, she did claim that, yeah.
That was her thing, that when she and Lackey got married, I saw them on a show where they sang together before they'd gotten married, and she said, no, that's just the way that I want it. I want it to be this way. And I thought that was terrific.
It is terrific.
I thought that was a terrific example, and that's why when she gets up and dances and does all this stuff, I don't think anything of it. I think she's just a very sexy girl. But she also, you know about what she really is. You know her morals. You know what she is. See, it's like Dolly Parton with her boobs.
Yeah.
Anybody else that dressed like Dolly Parton, they think she was a hooker.
Right.
But they don't look at Dolly Parton that way. No. They look at Dolly Parton and she's terrific.
Yeah.
It's because they know her attitude. She's a very loving, wonderful, nice person. Well, Jessica Simpson, to the youth today, is the same type of kid. And I think she exudes good things, not bad things. So I don't put her down. And
I think people are wrong
for doing that.
Yeah, I don't put her down either. My only comment is the movie is supposed to be horrid, and it's the number one movie in the country.
Well, first of all, the television show was horrid. It was horrid like the Beverly Hillbillies was horrid. It was horrid like Green Acres was horrid, was horrid.
Down in South, the Beverly Hillbillies was a fine
No,
program.
But I'm just saying, we never got any good reviews. As a matter of fact, we were called by Newton Minow, who was the head of the, at the head of the broadcasting or something with respect to the government, and he said, television was called a vast wasteland.
Right.
And now we have the outhouse in the vast wasteland, the Beverly Hillbillies. Okay?
Yeah.
And that was the way we were killed. We never had any good reviews at all. I can show you them. Buddy Ebsen was astounded. The Hollywood Reporter, the Variety, New York Times, L.A. Times, they all just tore us up as the worst show to ever be put on television.
Mm-hmm.
Why would anybody watch this? And then you have people like Robert Oppenheimer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the father of the atomic bomb.
Right.
And you have General Eisenhower. You have President Truman. You have different people. You have me, Alan J. Lerner, Lerner and Lowe. These kind of people were watching it and would actually take breaks from parties to go and look at it in the first 3 years it was on, because it got them away from all of the nonsense of the day that was terrible, because we were at war in Vietnam.
Right.
And all you saw were dead people and body bags and every day, you know, this crash, this person was killed, that person was killed, this was blown up, that was blown up, these people were captured and everything. And you got to get away from it for a half hour and not have to think about anything. Just have a good time. And it was a relief. And I really think that was part of the success of the show. Because timing is everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's somebody who said, a friend of mine's wife who just gave birth, she said, timing is everything. Yeah, and it's true.
Yeah. Now let me ask you a question, because this is what I was leading to. You know, with Bewitched came out, Starsky and Hutch, Charlie's Angels, all these different movies. Any chance of a Beverly Hillbillies movie? And is that something that you would encourage or maybe even participate in?
No. The Beverly Hillbillies movie, they actually did it at 20th Century Fox in 1993.
I don't remember it at all.
Okay, well, Jim Varney was a lead. Cloris Leachman played Granny. Diedrich Bader from The Drew Carey Show played me. Erica Alaniak played Ellie Mae. And, Miss Hathaway was played by, she's probably the biggest name in the whole bunch. And I'm Lily Tomlin.
Oh, okay.
Lily Tomlin played Miss Hathaway, and Dabney Coleman played Mr. Drysdale.
And did that movie do well?
It did about $50 million, but it wasn't big enough.
Yeah.
You know.
What did you think of it when it came out?
I thought it was fine. I'm not a big critic of people. I think that when I go to see a movie, I either like it or I don't like it. I don't go in there and try to analyze it and think, well, this wasn't this way, or this, if Jim Varney doesn't look like Jed, and he doesn't act like Jed, and all. I don't do those things.
Did they offer you or Donner a cameo in that?
No, a Buddy did a cameo in it, though. Buddy did Barnaby Jones in it.
Oh, really?
Yes. Which was, I thought was very cute. No, but they never talked to me. But there was nothing for me in it anyway. Plus the fact that at that particular time, I was working on my casino thing, and I didn't really want to do anything, but I wasn't asked anyway, so I can't say that I turned anything down, because nothing was ever offered to me.
Right. Hey, so you don't think that another movie will ever come out then, huh?
Oh, you can't say never, because look at A Star Is Born. They did A Star Is Born 3 or 4 times.
Mm.
You know, they did it with Frederick March back in the 30s, and then they did it with Judy Garland, and then they did it with
Streisand.
With Streisand, and I think they may have done it before that.
Mm.
So they've done it three or four times.
Yeah.
It's just sometimes if it works, if the chemistry is there, if for example some country western star became very big, you know, and maybe he was I don't know, maybe some country western star became big, like, you know, not like Jessica Simpson, because she's not country western per se, but and the ingredients go together, it may really work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If it had, maybe if Jessica Simpson had been Ellie Mae instead of Daisy Duke, it may have worked. You never know. It's just, you know, it's really hard to tell. If everybody knew what made a success, there wouldn't be any failures.
That's true. And again, timing is everything, so you never
know. That's correct.
Yeah.
Well, look, if you remember, and this has happened more than once, if you take a look at Bonnie and Clyde, they released Bonnie and Clyde, and Bonnie and Clyde was a failure. Then they re-released it at a different time, and it became a big hit.
That's true.
A lot of people don't even remember that.
Yeah.
The other thing is, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, they tried to get One Flew Over the Kirk Douglas, who owned the rights, tried to get One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest done for 10 or 12 years. Couldn't get it done. He let his son do it. His son got it done with Jack Nicholson, and it became the biggest hit of the year.
Right.
So it's all in timing. Had Kirk done it earlier, it may have been a failure.
Yeah, that's
you just
true.
Don't know.
Yeah.
You can't second guess yourself. You know, if you... It's just, at that moment in time, did it work or didn't it work? Anthony Quinn replaced Marlon Brando in Streetcar Named Desire on Broadway and got every bit as good a reviews as Marlon got, and people don't even remember it.
Yep.
Because Marlon Brando became the star on it.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Talking about movies, here's an interesting question. Your dad, who many of us know, Max Beer Sr., was a boxer.
Well, I don't know. How old are you?
I'm 50.
Okay. Well, you would probably remember him, but the people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s wouldn't know who Max, unless they were a sports enthusiast, especially boxing, wouldn't know that Max Baer Sr., my father, was the 13th heavyweight boxing champion of the world. Most people wouldn't know that. You assume that they know, but most people don't.
Well, the reason I'm asking about it is because he was actually portrayed in a recent movie called Cinderella Man.
Correct.
And I wanted to know what you thought of the portrayal and if there's any accuracy at all in it or anything that was completely false.
Is your name Tom Thumb?
No, I don't think so.
Well, then there was no accuracy in it. Ronnie Howard's a schmuck. Okay? Is that pretty clear? Ron Howard has no integrity at all. None.
Richie Cunningham, you're
Richie
question.
Cunningham has no integrity. He had more integrity. Richie Cunningham has integrity. You know, Opie has integrity, but Ron Howard has no integrity.
Wow.
He didn't call me. He didn't have anybody call me. He wasn't looking for any information, and he wasn't looking for the truth. He was looking to give his perspective of Jimmy Braddock, and he wanted to make Max Baer wear the black hat and be the bad guy. And he took an incident that happened in my dad's life where my dad killed Frankie Campbell in the ring by accident. It almost destroyed my dad's life. He lost four of his next six fights, started smoking, started clowning in the ring, and had nightmares for his entire life.
Wow.
He turned it around and made my dad glad that he killed guys. He was a killer. Was very proud of it. He also had him being rude and crude and boorish, where he said basically he was going to kill Jimmy Braddock or beat him up and then take care and he would comfort Renee Zellweger. In other words, because he was a womanizer.
Right.
Okay, and he was rude to women. He was just an ass. He made him like Clubber Lang was in Rocky III.
Yeah, the bad guy.
Well,
yeah.
No redeeming characteristics whatsoever. He was a pig.
Yeah.
He asked Talia Shire, Clubber Lang asked Talia Shire, hey, why don't you get rid of him? I'll take care of him. Then you come on over and be with a real man. Come on over to my place tonight.
Yeah.
Well, Ron Howard used that basic dialogue when my dad was supposedly pitching Renee Zellweger. And I did not see the quote. I did not hear it. But it was reported to me that Jimmy Braddock's son had said, when asked about the picture, he said that he didn't understand why they portrayed Max Baer the way they did.
Did they ever talk to you or your family about it?
No! I said that nothing. Zero.
Nothing.
Zero.
Nothing.
They had come to a conclusion that they wanted Max Baer to be a certain way.
Yeah.
And it was untrue, so why would they talk to the family who would say, hey, what are you out of your mind?
They could have created a fictional character, too.
Well, they were trying to do the true story of James J. Braddock.
Right.
And the biggest thing that happened to him was defeating my father. That's why they called him the Cinderella Man.
Right.
Because he did something that was magical.
Right.
He did something that nobody thought he could do.
He was the long, long, long shot in that fight.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. Well, you see, here's what you have. You have a guy like Matt, my father, who was given everything. God gave him a great chin, a hell of a punch, and a great body. He abused the hell out of it because he didn't train, didn't like fighting, hated fighting. And in the movie, they have him that he loves fighting. And my dad only liked it because of the money. And Jimmy Braddock was a guy that was just a good average fighter. He had 17, 18 losses. Maybe more, I don't even know. But he had bad breaks, physical breaks in his hands and things, and he also had some bad decisions. He lost some close decisions on and things. He was just unlucky. He was, like he said in the movie, he thought he was jinxed because he never caught a break.
Right.
And the whole point is that just like Rocky, who was nothing but a leg bed breaker, a collector, and he went the distance with Apollo Creed in Rocky I. And then he knew he wasn't just another bum from the neighborhood because nobody had ever gone the distance with Apollo Creed.
Right.
And that was what he basically did. It proved that he had the guts to go the distance. And when Jimmy Braddock beat my father, they could have done it exactly the same way or very similar, you know, with one guy that had all the talent and pissed it away and the other guy that just worked very hard and won. It's like the C student. And the A student doesn't apply himself and gets C's, and the C student applies himself and gets B's.
Right.
You know, in other words, that's what it is. It comes to how do you apply the talent that God gave you? Well, my dad just wasted it, basically, because he didn't like it, but it was a means to making money. They both came out of the Depression in the late 30s, in the late 20s. And my dad was working for 25 cents a day slopping hogs. You know what that is?
I do.
Okay, well, a lot of people don't. It's where the ranchers would go and pick up the garbage from the grocery store and the restaurants and throw it out to the hogs and out of their trucks, and the hogs would root through it, and they would eat it, and then the farm ranchers would plow through the rest of the mulch and use it for mulch.
Right.
My dad was getting 25 cents a day. His first fight, he knocked out a guy in 5 minutes in the second round, 2 minutes into the second round, named Chief Caribou, a big Indian. And they paid my dad $35. Well, when they gave my dad the $35, he turns around and says, "Hey, I can fight three or four more times tonight." And they said, "Well, Max, you're not in shape. You can't do that." He says, "I don't care whether I get beat or not. You paid the $35 anyway, win or lose, right?" He didn't care. The idea was go in there, get $35, let him beat on him for a while. He doesn't give a damn. It's a hell of a lot better than working for 25 cents a day.
Right.
And that's the way he figured. He'd put on a good show, and that was it.
Yeah.
So his attitude was just totally different. And in a 1972 book by Jimmy Braddock, the Jimmy Braddock was quoted in, it was called In This Corner or In the Corner, and it said that Max Baer was a good guy. He should have been an actor, not a fighter, because he never liked it. Yeah. Now, this is coming from James Braddock.
Hey, did you ever consider boxing yourself?
Apples, oranges, apricots, peaches, pears.
So you never actually did that?
Oh, I boxed a little bit in college, but, you know, I had no endurance, and I never knew why, and I trained real hard, and I kept doing it, and I kept trying to get myself where I could get a second win, and everybody said second win. I never got a first win, and I didn't know why, and I didn't find out until I was 45 years old that I had asthma.
Yeah.
And I couldn't breathe, and, I mean, I still use the inhalers and stuff, because, and especially up here at Lake Tahoe, where I'm at 7,000 feet right now. So I have to watch the pollen, and I have to watch this nonsense, the dust and crap like that.
I'm the same way. I also have asthma as well.
Oh, you got asthma?
I do.
Did you have it from childhood? Did you know you had it from childhood?
I actually did, but it wasn't diagnosed till I was older, though.
Okay. Yeah. Well, see, my brother's was diagnosed early.
Yeah.
I never was. I never thought about it. I never had the wheezing, the heavy wheezing that my brother had. But I knew that when I would run wind sprints, and I'd get tired. I had no oxygen going to my limbs. When I try to punch the bag for 3 minutes in the heavy bag, I'd get tired, and I couldn't. Why in the hell am I? This is happening, and I didn't realize that it was oxygen starvation to the muscles.
It might be better that you weren't diagnosed. If you were, maybe you would have had your inhaler. You might have been boxing still, and you never.
No, I wouldn't have been doing that.
No.
I'd have probably gotten my butt kicked so early that it would have been forget about it. You know, my dad said boxing was a very religious sport. It's far better to give than receive.
Yeah, that's exactly true. That's absolutely true. So folks can keep up with Max Baer Jr. At JethrosCasino.com.
It's J-E-T-H-R-O-S no apostrophe, JethrosCasino.com, and they can see the Beverly Hillbilly Mansion and the Beverly Hillbilly Limousine and Granny's Vittles and Hog Jowls Restaurant, Jethro's All-You-Can-Eat Buffet, and Drysdale's Fancy Eating for the Richens, and they can see the slot machines I have. We have about 1,100 slot machines out now that are Granny's is Moonshine Money, Jed's is Clampett Cash, and Jethro's is Bubbling Crude, and we're coming out with a new one this year called Raccoons to Riches. It's Ellie Mae's machine.
There you go. Talk about Ellie Mae. Do you ever talk to Donna anymore?
Oh, I talk to Donna from time to time. The last time I actually saw her was at Paul Henning's memorial service this year, earlier this year.
Right.
But before that, the last time I saw her was at Buddy Ebsen's memorial, and then before that, at Buddy's, when Buddy was in the hospital.
She still looks pretty good.
Donna, hey, look, we're all getting older. She's about a year or two older than I am, and I'm 67. I'll be 68 in December.
Yeah.
That's why I said I'm gonna start building this thing one way or another in June of next year. I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to build it wherever I'm going to build it. I'm going to start building it.
Now, do you have any kids?
None that I know of.
No, they said that. Okay. I was wondering if you had.
That was my father's line. Okay. Years ago, when they said, when he lost to Jimmy Braddock, and he said, well, you know, Braddock's got, I don't know, three or five kids or whatever he had at the time. And he said, he says, I'm glad that Jimmy did this. He says, he can use the money. He's got five kids to support,
mm-hmm.
or three kids to support, whatever it was. He's got a big family. And they said, well, do you have any kids, Max? And he says, none that I know of.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to wish you a lot of luck, Max. I hope that your dreams come true, and we'll check in with you again.
Hey, look, at the next time, hopefully, it won't be 5 years, and the next time, maybe you can come out and do a remote from there and take a little vacation for a few days and see it so you can go back and tell your friends what it's like and maybe induce them to take a vacation trip out and take a look at Jethro's Beverly Hillbilly Mansion and Casino.
Well, we got 9.5 million people around the country listening to this, so
you have
we can do that. We have 9.5 million people out there.
I'm glad you told me that later. I would have panicked. You know, I can't handle the pressure.
Well, you did a great job. It was always good to talk to you.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. I sure appreciate it.
Take care, Max.
You take care. Have a great day. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.